This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is the evening edition with Lynn and Kelvin. We are spending the last 2 weeks of 2018 looking back at everything that the year has brought. Today, our focus is on politics. It's been a seismic year for Malaysian politics with GE14 and a change of power for the first time in 60 years. Joining us to discuss all this is Amir Farid, political analyst at KRA Group. So the first thing we have to ask is, of course, as I mentioned, it's been a landmark year for Malaysian politics. What were the sentiments like prior to GE14?
Well, there was a lot of general unhappiness on the ground in the lead up to GE14. There was a lot of distrust with the then Barisan National Government on a host of issues. And there was also this sentiment of disgust, being disgusted with the level of corruption and arrogance displayed by the then government. But of course, when we did our ground research, including polling, some of these sentiments were not easily captured because, especially on the Malay ground, which we spent a lot of time understanding, some of these issues, they did not articulate it. They do not want to answer your questions openly. But there was a general unhappiness over not just politics, but of course the economy. And again, the bread and butter issues was top of the voters' concern.
So what were some of those policies or promises that BN were consistently failing to deliver, particularly after their slim GE13 win?
Of course, when you look at BN GE13 manifesto, for instance, a lot of it was on the economy. And even the budget, subsequent budgets from GE13 were supposed to deliver more for the B40 and the middle class, the M40. But I think they fell short on delivering on this. One example is promise for housing. In the BN GE13 manifesto, I remember they promised to build up to 1 million affordable houses. But this was not this wasn't the outcome. It was the objective was not met. I think they barely built more than 100,000 houses. Price controls, wages, employment opportunities and issues. So a lot of it is the restlessness on economic opportunities, I feel.
Let's talk about manifestos for a little bit because we've been addressing that subsequently since, you know, there's been a lot of, well, it isn't a manifesto or it isn't, or they're U-turning on the manifesto. Do you think that our reliance on or our understanding of manifestos in elections, in political promises, has that changed this year?
Okay. Yeah, there's so much emphasis on manifesto this round. And I've said this in many occasions that manifestos are designed to be lofty and sometimes ambitious, can be unrealistic because when it is first published, it was designed with the sole aim of winning the largest group, the largest number of voters for a particular political party. But of course, for instance, BN campaign and the fact that they have achieved their manifesto promises of the past and therefore now making the current PH government accountable to its manifesto. But again, as I said, when designing a manifesto, the sole aim is about winning. And of course, some of the promises made might not be properly researched and all that, given the lack of information. Because if you're not in the government, for instance, you're not privy to the whole set of data and policy options, for instance.
So looking ahead then to next year, I mean, I'm just jumping around a bit, but looking ahead, does that mean we should change the way we view the Pakatan Harapan Manifesto in terms of how it informs future policy? Should we stop relying on it?
Well, I think it is on the Pakatan Harapan leaders themselves to communicate this to voters, whether or not they are able to fulfill some of their manifesto. Of course, the expectations of the people will be very high that they would honour their promises, the promises made. But then again, I think it is on the Pakatan Harapan government and their leaders to explain, communicate and actually outline what are the priorities of the in the manifesto that could be done and what could not be done. And the rakyat has the right to know this from the very beginning.
Do you think this would change depending on when or how it would affect them depending on when they announce that kind of thing, saying like, perhaps next year they announce such things as compared to announcing it closer to the next general elections? Would that impact them in different ways?
No, I think it's better to help manage the expectations of the electorate by informing early, because key is transparency in your communication, right? And this is what was lacking in the previous government. People then were always fooled, were always surprised by government action in the past. And this current Pakatan government, they want at the back of being able to shape and master public opinion. And therefore, they need to be more sensitive to public opinion. And therefore, the need to transparently communicate their policy, potential policy prescriptions and framework is, I think, of is required in this day and age.
So we can't speak about 2018 in Malaysian politics without speaking about our current Prime Minister, Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad. It was an interesting reincarnation, I suppose, to follow the idea that he was returning to politics and to actively participating in that sense. Did you expect his trajectory back into politics to be well received?
Among the masses, yes, because if you look at we've been tracking sentiments over the past 2 years, and Tun Dr. Mahathir, as an opposition leader, when from 2 years back, when he joined forces, he left UMNO and joined forces with the then opposition parties, he continued to be viewed very positively by the general public. And therefore, it is not a surprise that he has achieved what he's achieved. And even from when he was in UMNO, he was outside UMNO, after the first stint as Prime Minister, he has a massive influence and following. And therefore, this trajectory is not surprising. And it is also, I've said it many times, that he is the only one who can penetrate the Malay ground for Pakatan Harapan. And it's proven to be true.
Was he truly the silver bullet that took the previous government down?
I personally believe yes. And of course, there are a lot of debate on this. But having seen him in action and speaking to people on the ground, they truly believe and have great respect for him. This is a 93-year-old man who came back from retire, who could have been resting at home.
Doing anything
he wants. But he's come back to save the nation. And this is greatly appreciated by the public. When they felt helpless back then, they saw light in Tun Dr. Mahathir. And this is where I think he was the game changer for Pakatan.
Was it possibly also because during the election period and during the campaigning times, there were a lot of insults thrown towards Mahathir's way from whether be it Najib or be it the likes of Zahid Hamidi or so on, right? Did that in any way play into helping Mahathir get into power? Because I understand that disrespecting your elders is something that we don't think about, but because it's so tied into our culture, that might have, I guess, some leeway. Yeah.
No, totally. Disrespecting the elders is something that is is not acceptable in any culture, Eastern culture especially, right? And therefore, the sympathy was for Tun Dr. Mahathir, and he played it very well. And of course, with his wit and humor to an extent, he managed to to turn things around, any opportunity to play to his advantage. So in terms of even messaging to Dr. Mahathir was on point, and so was the Pakatan Harapan coalition going into the elections. I think they were, during the campaign, they were very systematic, and the messaging, again, was on point. And of course, there's always the magic of the election itself and all the other unforced errors that was committed by the other side.
We're going to be continuing this discussion with Amir Farid, political analyst at KRA Group, about Malaysian politics in 2018. Up next, more about Tun Mahathir, as well as, of course, that first 100 days in power. You are listening to The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Bigotry-free Malaysia, BFM 89.9.
This is The Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin, and today we're taking a look back at 2018 and Malaysian politics. With us, of course, is Amir Farid, political analyst at KRA Group. Amir, earlier we were talking about, of course, the return of Tun Mahathir into the political fray, and just looking to where we are now, post GE14, do you think that in some ways his very, very long time affiliation with the old powers that be, has that played into some negative narratives about the current government?
Well, we can't run from that. They do share certain friends, contacts, and long history of being together. And therefore, in terms of connections, yes, there is, but it is all about moving forward and whether or not you see Tun Dr. Mahathir is taking on a new mindset and approach, being mindful of the fact that he is now leader of a new coalition government, which is different from the previous one, because you need to, as you can see, the Pakatan Harapan coalition, it is a coalition of equals. And the problem with Barisan National Coalition previously, it became more of a big brother coalition where UMNO was dictating everything. And therefore, given these circumstances, I think he's got to tailor his approach to the new day and age. And of course, another thing is he needs to, Tun Dr. Mahathir this time around doesn't have, he's always governed with 2/3 majority in his first stint. And this is the first time he's not governing with a 2/3 majority. This is the new norm in Malaysia, that 2/3 is no longer the norm. So he has got to, again, manage the expectations and govern in this new political landscape.
Most polls prior to G14 seem to suggest that the election outcome would be that BN would still win, but with a much slimmer majority. Mm-hmm. In hindsight, were there any indicators that the election was going to go the way that it did?
Of course, I was on the show and on BFM talking about this before the elections, and a lot of the pollsters, including ourselves, when you look at the data, when it's aggregated, it's very difficult to feel to get a very good read. So you've got to match it with, again, ground research, which was what we did. And of course, when you go to indicators in terms of rally numbers, for instance, it's massive. But this is not unlike 2013. The difference this round is the Facebook Live. So now the message is being broadcasted to the whole nation in a wider audience. Look at the Putrajaya rally, for instance. I think this end of the first week of campaigning. And in terms of the numbers, in terms of size, it was the same as 2013, but with Facebook Live, everyone was watching it. So was the Langkawi address the night before voting. One thing that I've got to mention here, a lot of pollsters and researchers did not carefully look at Sarawak. And that was a surprise because one, understandably, if you want to do major research in Sarawak, it's very, very costly because of the size, the sheer size. Yeah, so a lot of people make assumptions that Sarawak would vote mostly along the way they did in the previous state elections, and therefore a lot of people misread Sarawak completely, and that was kind of it alters the whole way that that they predict the election outcomes.
Let's talk about that transition of power. Mm. I think I have sort of two threads to pursue here. One, of course, was there was a peaceful transition, which talked to us about the significance of that first.
Of course, this is the first ever time we have a change in government. It was a very jittery evening for many people that night. There's no script for this. I was on air as well on that evening, and you kind of struggle to give answers to some questions because you have to look at the constitutional aspects of things. Yeah, who gets to meet the king to present credentials and stuff like that. But alhamdulillah, the transition was peaceful, although the people were gathering outside the Istana. Tun Dr. Mahathir had to wait to be sworn in and all that. There were potential flashpoints, but it was averted. The police, the civil service, and all that cooperated. And I think the most important thing that we need to remember from that night, apart from the very famous now Tun Dr. Mahathir's PC at 2 o'clock in the morning or something like that, I remember the announcement by the chief secretary to the government declaring it's a holiday for the next few days because it was part of the Pakatan government promise, right? So it's that signal, the transition of power. And it's very, for us to have, for Malaysians generally to have done it so peacefully, we should give a pat on our own backs. This is something that is significant because you look at countries around the region, transitions are not managed as orderly as we did. And this is something that we ought to be proud of.
The other thing that I wanted to talk mm-hmm. about in terms of that transition of power was, as you talked about, Dr. Mahathir is returning to this role of Prime Minister for the first time without that two-thirds majority, but also to, in his words, I suppose, a different civil service than the one that a different spirit of civil service than the one that he had in the past. How do you think that factored in with a completely new government taking over these roles, but having people within who have been working within these ministries for a very long time?
No, I think that posed a very, very big challenge to this new Pakatan Harapan leaders in government because, one, they are the politicians are inexperienced. This is their first time governing. And secondly, they need to first realign the civil servants back. And the civil service is a huge a force of more than 1.4 million people. So you talk about momentum, right? Like, it's to shift them, the inertia, to shift them to the other side. It does take time. And I think, of course, the first few weeks during Dr. Mahathir, lectured the senior civil servants and the civil service in general. But I think over time, he has worked with them closely, built the ties and confidence. And in the past couple of weeks, you can see that the tone of the current government on civil service is changing, saying that, you know, from previously, like, oh, it's so corrupt and all that. No, there's no low level of corruption in the civil service. So the civil servant is a very important stakeholder in governing because politicians come and go. The civil service is there to stay, to run the country.
We're speaking today with Amir Farid, political analyst at KRA Group, taking a look back at the year that was in Malaysian politics. Up next, we talk specifically about this new government and what they've achieved. You are listening to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters, BFM 89.9.
This is the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin. Joining us in the studio is Amir Farid, political analyst at KRA Group. We are taking a look back at 2018 and Malaysian politics. Amir, we've been talking about kind of pre-GE14 and then that transition of power. But now coming into the first 100 days, what do you think were the highlights?
Okay, in terms of the first 100 days, first of all, it was the announcement of the full composition of cabinet. Of a lot of discussions and conspiracy theories came out the first few weeks because the announcement was staggered, right? And when the full lineup was announced, I think that was a major milestone in the first couple of weeks of Pakatan Harapan. And then, of course, you have abolition of GST. GST has been a hotly contested topic, and the Pakatan Harapan coalition campaigned on it. So they decisively acted on GST, regardless of the merits of the policy debate, and went on with it. This is something that I think needs to be credited, because the government was firm and decisive in delivering its promise. And of course, there was, I'm not sure whether it's part of the 100 days, but I would consider it as a milestone, the midterm review of the 11th Malaysia Plan, because one important thing is the Prime Minister dedicated 33 paragraphs out of 200 paragraphs, if I'm not mistaken, on governance. And this shows what is the priority of this current government, is putting governance back at the center of things. And of course, the budget also was another milestone. It was overall a well-received budget, from the first budget of Pakatan Harapan. And I think it was not disappointing.
So what were some of the other milestones that the government has achieved?
Okay, there are plenty of milestones, but my personal favourite would be the asset declaration of those in government. Because as much as people give snide remarks about certain politicians having huge assets or liabilities is not included as part of the asset declaration, but hey, this was never done before. And it is important to track whether or not it is a very big step in governance to be able to transparently track whether your elected reps is going to enrich themselves while being in power. That's one. And two, one of the things that some people have criticized the Pakatan government is the 30% quota for females in executive positions. They fell short with them in the cabinet, but it's already a big upgrade from the past. And in terms of women in position of leadership in GLCs and all that, I think we've seen significant progress on that front. So personally, I would pick that as some of the key milestones that I personally like to highlight.
In both of those instances, mm-hmm. though, there is room for improvement. And do you think that that is something that we are going to continue seeing that push for, in terms of seeing more transparency in terms of declaration of assets, seeing more of insistence, I suppose, that women need to be given a voice within the space?
Yep, definitely, because this is what people voted the Pakatan government for. They were tired of the lack of transparency, the lack of accountability in the previous administration. And therefore, it is wise for the Pakatan Harapan leaders to be transparent, to be accountable to some of their decisions, and to all of their decisions, of course. But it needs the political will, and the Pakatan leaders should not be afraid to use the political capital that they have gained in the past year. The mandate that they got was decisive, and there is no reason not to use that political will to make some of these changes and reforms.
So with former Prime Minister Najib Razak's arrest and the following investigations into 1MDB, is that a sea of change to how things would have been in the past?
Yes, it is something that shocked the nation entirely, especially the first time that the Prime Minister, former Prime Minister Dato' Sri Najib Razak, was charged and brought to court. It would never have happened in the past, and this is something of a new norm that we are seeing. Likewise with the charging of former Deputy Prime Minister Dato' Sri Zahid Hamidi. And I believe there will be a lot more going forward. But then again, you've got to see that there is only so much excitement that can be generated from these kind of arrests by the public. Of course, it will still be headline grabbing and all that. But if the current government do not pay enough attention to basic issues, bread and butter issues, I am not sure whether people will be as enthusiastic about this arrest. Of course, we want to see justice done, and people demand justice, but whether it is on top, it is prioritized very heavily by the masses, is another thing.
We're speaking today with Amir Farid, political analyst at KRA Group, talking about how Malaysian politics have been in 2018. Up next, we're going to be talking about something that we're currently living through, some policy U-turns. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Business, finance and music, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the Evening Edition with Lynn and Kelvin. Our guest today in the studio, Amir Farid, political analyst at KRA Group. We are taking a look back at how 2018 has been in terms of Malaysian politics. Amir, this is, I suppose, a very central question when it comes to trying to understand this current government. While there has been follow through on some of the promises, have they made for sound policy, do you think?
Well, there has been, in the past couple of months, knee-jerk reaction to issues, and things are not properly thought through. For instance, the PTPTN debate. It is ironic that how in the manifesto you go from promising no PTPTN to the public to then the having mandatory cut in the salary, right? So, and the thing that I think shocked many people is the fact that there was no public consultation. And which is, this is something that is expected of a BN administration, but it shocked many voters that it happened in the PH administration, given, again, as I said, the fact that the PH wrote into power with the ability to shape public opinion, and therefore they have to be a bit more sensitive to public opinion. So it is things like this. It is, there's no public consultation, no communications of certain policy framework. It's only been 6 months, so it's understandable that you are not seeing some policies being implemented and still under discussion. But the process of coming up with these policies need to be scrutinized.
So critics would say that the more things change, the more they stay the same, right? This new government promised change but reverted back to the policies of its predecessors once in power. Do you see this happening when you compare the old guard versus the new? For example, Lim Guan Eng being seen as being easily acquitted, Pakatan backtracking on promises, lifting moratoriums on certain draconian acts.
Well, therein lies that danger and that fear of reverting to the easy way out, which is what is already there, the status quo, right? Again, the hopes of the people who voted this current government is for change and commitment to reform. And you can ignore this at your own peril. It's simple as that. But having said that, some of the policies that were put in place by the previous administration, they're not all bad. So therefore, it is understandable that when there's a new government, some of these policies might be continued. Because in essence, the policies themselves are not bad. It is the politics that have colored and shaped people's opinion on some of these policies.
You've spoken a little bit about why it is that people would have opted for the Pakatan Harapan coalition. Mm-hmm. What do you see as its main strengths? I mean, it seems to, there seems to be a few things, a few elements that are coming together, and they're not all equally strong. But what do you think are the main selling points?
The main selling point is value-based leadership. Okay, this is what was missing in the previous administration. Corruption was rampant. They did not hold dear to the universal values that a lot of us identify with. And of course, the current coalition government is more equal and more balanced in terms of the power distribution. And therefore, this is important because you just don't have one party calling the shots and expecting others to toe the line. So this is more democratic. Of course, it's messy and noisier, but you people do appreciate that kind of like democratic debate from within the government. And one major thing that is different from the previous administration is that this current government has a large support of urbanites, right? Because the past three cycles, BN has been steadily losing the urban voters, which led them to retreat to rural voters. So with urbanites, there is more room to reason out policies, and therefore they need to build this tie and connection to the urbanites in getting them to participate in formulating policies and giving policy ideas.
And going back to that previous question where you said that there is the risk of Pakatan going back to what's known and what's comfortable, other aspects of that comes out in policies, Mahathir's Look East policy and his third national car project, and even the rumoured Crooked Bridge project, right? Do you think Tun Nam has kind of stayed the same in his approach as a leader, or has it evolved over the years?
Well, if you speak to people who... I'm a bit too young for the first stint of for Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir, but those who are close to him believe he's more consultative now as opposed to before. After all, people did... He always joke about this, that people call him dictator in the past. So he's a bit more... He's more consultative. But there are, of course... and he stays true to his principles and beliefs and how to industrialize Malaysia. And this is where that whole debate of the third national car comes in. And he still firmly believes that Malaysia needs a catalyst to spearhead growth, especially through engineering of a third national car, Crooked Bridge relationship with Singapore. A lot of it is still the same. But then again, that is what makes Tun Dr. Mahathir special. But we have to understand, and Tun Dr. Mahathir likes technology. He's always... So back to this whole engineering obsession with cars and all that, he is someone who understands and loves and appreciates technology. And this is where I think it's important now for Malaysia as we move on to this whole talk about Industrial Revolution 4.0. And you can see Tun Dr. Mahathir saying the right things when it comes to these issues surrounding technology, and understands the challenges. And he will, I think, continue to pursue policies which will be beneficial for us on that front.
You mentioned earlier how there's more noise now. There's more noise in our democracy. And I think that was something that came through even during the PKR party elections, with them saying, well, you know, we're talking because it's democracy. Now we speak our minds. Having said that, as a community, I don't think we're used to hearing this much from our politicians, and we're not used to hearing them talk about one another or kind of contradict one another as much. And this sometimes, especially with the possible looming cabinet reshuffle, might have created an impression that there is some instability in this coalition. Do you think that that is a fair perception, or is it really just this is the amount of conversation that democracy requires and the public is the one that needs to get used to it?
No, I totally agree with you, Lynn, on the second part. I feel that this is what we Malaysians should get used to. It is the right amount of noise for a democracy, because we have to draw from our experience from the past when no one criticizes, no one do the check and balance act on a party in power. Then all things go haywire. Look at our neighbours, Indonesia, Philippines. We do observe the same level of noise. But then again, as long as they are talking and at the end of the day coming out with a united voice in terms of decisions, then it is okay. Of course, politically, some people would argue that it gives away the perception of instability. But it is the new norm in the new Malaysian political landscape to expect some noise on as much as this.
All this noise, but is Pakatan listening? Because I feel that with the recent ISET rally, for example, a lot might feel that this new government is elite and only serves the urbanites, only serves a particular class.
The liberals.
The liberals. Are they listening?
This is where I think they should be a bit more sensitive in terms of listening to all different segments of the society. There is a danger of being in a particular echo chamber, right? If you choose a certain social media platform, for instance, and this was the mistake of BN. They, in the past, they loved to listen to their own spin and all that. And this is where I think the new Pakatan government needs to learn from these mistakes and do not be guided by just the conversations in your echo chamber. Try to reach out to as many people as possible, because when you are governing, the problem with it is every day there'll be issues, right? So there is a problem, there's going to be a conflict when you didn't have a time, you do not have the time to listen. So there should be some people in the current administration that just do this, listen to what the people are saying, and then inputting it back to the top leadership systematically.
Amir, our final question for you then. What are your reflections on how 2018 has been in Malaysian politics, and what are you expecting to see in terms of the political landscape in 2019?
Okay, for me, 2018 has been a historical year. First in our lifetime, seeing a change in government. Groundbreaking things like you never expected before happen. So your norms, again, as I said, have to be readjusted. So it is all about getting used to this new environment. And what am I seeing in 2019? I think there will be a lot more noise, right? And then the current government will be in power by then for more than 6 months into already the first year. So you're looking at the first year milestones and stuff like that. And they should be able to get better grips on governing. So they cannot make silly mistakes like they've done in the past couple of months, because there is a fine line between inexperience and incompetence. And this is where you do not want to go into that territory, because when you are in that territory, it is very difficult to get out of. One thing that I would love to see in 2019 is the government seriously putting an effort into rebuilding trust between the public and government, because this was destroyed by the past administration. There is a great trust deficit between the public and the government, and we do not want to see this continue being the trend in the future. Issues of identity politics, for instance, that has been dominating the public debate in the past few weeks, will continue to be a trend, but the government needs to step in and have an open discussion on issues like this, but probably start with baby steps, controlled open discussion first. I know it's ironic, but things like this, the government needs to start somewhere. Because if not, when identity politics rears its ugly head, everyone is at a loss. So it's on the government, actually, to do something about it.
Amir, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. We've been speaking today with Amir Farid, political analyst at KRA Group, looking ahead a little bit to 2019, but mostly taking a look back at the year that was in Malaysian politics. You are listening to The Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.